Thank you. Now I'm on your level. I'm not above you lording it down on you. So anyway, everybody can hear me good or well if I was married to an English teacher. Well, I got up at 3 o'clock this morning. I took my wife, Carson, and Sophia to the airport, got them there by 4. They are on their way to Florida to a National Golf Course Owners Association meeting. It's coupled with the huge PGA and the National Golf Course Superintendents Association. I typically half listen, and Allison was telling me that she was winning some sort of an award, but I don't know what it was. That was a joke. She is winning an award for all of her contribution to helping to grow the game of golf nationally. My wife is kind of a big deal. Kind of hard to live with her. But anyway, I'm hopeful for their safe return. I'm glad that I am going to have some alone time until Thursday. I'm going to get to watch the Chiefs game without any interruption, so I'm excited for that. First, I want to tell you how excited I am to be back. It's been 5 weeks, and I've only been here for 2 weeks of those 5 weeks. This is the second week. Last week I would have been here, but I was exposed to COVID, and so I didn't want to bring that to anyone. I would like to thank everyone here who gave me a card or a text, a visit, whatever, or even supported my wife's family in their time of loss. It honestly has really bolstered my confidence. And, I'm really happy about that. My confidence has been boosted, and it's because of you, and you guys have showed an outpouring love to me and my family. I appreciate that. There was something else I was going to say that I didn't write down, but, I don't remember what it was. If it comes to me, I'll just go into it. So today's lesson is going to come out of Job. And for the last 5 weeks, I've been rolling Job around in my head and trying to read. You know, the first couple of chapters of Job are really good to get into, and then you get into those middle verses, and I'm not a literary genius. I get kind of lost, and I don't exactly understand what they're talking about. But the last chapter has some really good stuff for us, too. But what I wanted to talk about is a couple of phrases that are a phrase that we see in chapter 1 and also in chapter 2. But first of all, I want to kind of remind us, I don't think I have to remind us about Job, but I want to as a time filler, so I have my 30 minutes, just trying to be real here. Job is an interesting story, because within one day, Job loses his livestock and his servants. And just as he's hearing that news, he learns that fire falls from the sky and consumes his sheep and his shepherd. And as that story is being told, another person comes and says, "Your camels have been taken and your servants have been murdered." And as that story is getting told, another man comes and says, "A big wind came and it blew down this house that all of your kids were in there, and the servants attending your kids, they all perished." What a day. What a day would that be? That's just a lot of sensory overload. How could you deal with such things? Not only the ability for you to make money is now gone, your livelihood is gone, but your children and your servants are gone. Well, it wasn't too long, but there was another time when God and Satan had come together. And Satan had decided he wanted skin for skin. He saw that just going after Job's livelihood, going after his possessions wasn't enough. He wanted to go after physical anguish. He thought this would do the job. But he still was not allowed to kill Job. But Job got sores on him. And I don't know how this works. This really doesn't make any sense to me. That to find some sort of relief, he would sit in ashes. And he would take broken pottery, peel open those sores, and I assume put ashes in there to kind of help dry it out. I don't know. It just doesn't make sense to me. But what does make sense to me is pain. Long-lasting pain that painkillers won't even touch. I think we've all probably had some of that pain. I think we all understand the pain that Job went through. But here's the kicker. Here's the thing that just topples the whole thing for me. Job's wife. I love my wife. My wife is my greatest cheerleader. When I am down, she cheers me up. When I'm feeling small and insignificant and self-loathing, she reminds me that I am somebody, that I'm a good man, that I'm doing good things, that I'm trying hard. And I think every woman out here has done that for their husband. And I think likewise the husbands have done that for their wives when they're feeling down. But here we have one of the most amazing things I don't think I could ever handle. She says, Job, give up. And die. Give up and die. What would that do to your mental state? You've handled all this anguish, physical anguish. You've lost everything. And now the one that you have that is your helpmate just tells you to give up and die. I've never really understood how the book of Job works with this conversation between God and Satan. I've never understood how God could put Job in such a situation. What is he playing games with us humans? I've never picked up on it. But over the last 5 weeks, and I don't know if the seed was planted because of my brother, we have lots of conversations, but I was talking to him about my problems. My problems that started 2 years ago. I had gout. At least that's what they told me. But when they took my blood samples, there was no uric acid, so it wasn't gout. But still, there would be times I couldn't even walk on my foot. It would turn beet red. But spring came, and I just went to work. But work was different. I couldn't do what I used to do. I would, you know, a lot of these homes now have these walkout basements, so they make these lawns really steep on the side yards. I used to be able to walk up those things with no problem. But I'd walk up one of those things, and man, I would have to stop. And I thought I needed to stretch out my muscle. I thought it was cramping. But it was starving for blood. So I went that whole summer, just upset. But it was hard for me. So the next summer happens, and it's increasingly getting worse. And I'm a guy who likes to stay busy. But at night, when I got off work, I used to go out and work or play in the garage or play in the yard and do something. But I just found myself sitting in my recliner, moping, going to bed, waking up, doing the same thing. Working, coming home, moping, sitting in my chair. I didn't like that life. That's not me. So in July, I went on a motorcycle ride. I got home. My leg was really bad. Allison tells me we need to go to emergency. I'm like, no, we don't need to go to emergency. But Allison is very persuasive. And we find that there's nothing wrong, but they tell me to go check up with my primary doctor. Check up with my primary doctor, and she can clearly see that my foot is changing colors, which is something that hadn't happened before with the doctor. So she immediately sent me to go get a, lack of a better term, a sonogram, where they would take a look at my arteries. And the nurse, or the woman that was doing the pictures, she stopped in the middle of this test and left the room and said, I'll be back. I'm like, uh-oh, what's this? She comes back and she says, put on your clothes and go home. I'm like, oh, all right. Well, when I get home, I finally see I got a voicemail from my doctor. And she said, you better get to the hospital and you better get there now. You got a blood clot. So I'm freaking out. I'm texting Ginger and Mark. Oh man, I need prayers. I'm going to die. But I didn't die. I'm still here. So we found out that I had a blood clot, and we made a surgery date for September. We went through that surgery date. The doctor said he couldn't do anything for me. So I'm like, I got to get a second opinion. Go to Iowa City. They say, we got to do something. So we get the surgery date for December 15th. And I think about being wheeled into that operating room, and the last thing I see is this really bright light and these two anesthesiologist nurse putting a thing over my mouth telling me to breathe normal. And then I remember waking up and asking if it worked. And they said no. A second no. It didn't work. What should have been turned into a 2-hour surgery actually was an 8-hour surgery. Later I found that I was continually clotting. And I found that my IVs were actually clotting closed. I'm not a medical professional, but I'm sitting here thinking in my mind, that's kind of dangerous to have your IVs clot closed. It's kind of dangerous to have clots that could go to your brain, that could go to your lungs, that could go to your heart. Well, they told me they thought these clots were caused by heparin. So this last time I went to see my doctor, they told me, no, we don't know why you clotted. And so now I'm going in for another surgery, Lord willing, February 1st, not knowing if I'm going to clot again, not knowing if this surgery is going to work again. I saw there was a team of surgeons. There was three of them, two men and a woman. I don't remember the woman's name. I didn't see her much after she kind of told me something that I wasn't ready to hear. But she had briefly mentioned amputation. That was a surreal moment. Because the surgery that they had done had left my foot in worse condition than what it was before the surgery. That's why she was thinking that it might be possible. And four people came to mind. All of us here know Casey Van Bonnen, or maybe some of us don't. He was like my grandfather, where he stuck his hands in a corn picker where he shouldn't have, and he lost his fingers. My dad did account, the horror of pulling grandpa's fingers out of the corn picker and taking them to the hospital because maybe they could have put them back on. But those two men, they made it work. Life handed them lemons, and they made it work. My grandpa Hainer, my mom's dad, he was tending for some sheep, got knocked over. Blood clots formed behind his knee. Gangrene set in, and he lost his leg. And not too long ago, my mom's brother, Norris, lost his leg due to an aneurysm. And it was such a surreal moment that I'm thinking about all of these men. But all of these men made it work. They got a prosthesis, got a wheelchair. It was a painful, long deal, but they made it work. But what does this have to do with Job? If we go to the first chapter and the second chapter, there's a verse, and this is what my brother would continue to tell me when I was telling him about all my problems. And it's God talking to Satan. And he says, have you considered my servant Job? Have you considered my servant Job? How does God describe Job? He describes him as a blameless man, an upright man, a man that fears God, a man that shuns evil. God goes so far to tell Satan, there is no one like him. There is not anybody like him. And for years, all of my life, Job is a character that I will never be able to obtain. His righteousness. I will never be able to obtain that. I'm not blameless. There's times I'm not upright. There's times I don't shun evil like I should. God told Satan, have you considered my servant Job? And for years I thought it was a dirty trick. But now, after this 5 weeks, I'm looking at it, just maybe a little bit different. I'm looking at the confidence that God has in Job. God knew something about Job that Job didn't know about himself. Job, or God, had a lot of confidence. Why else would he say these things to Satan? And I keep thinking about my brother. He would say, "Have you considered my servant Kelly? Have you considered my servant Kelly?" Well, I think that's true for all of us. I don't know if God and Satan still have these conversations. But this congregation right now has gone through some heavy loads. We all got some heavy loads. Typically, there's a group of women in the back, and I think about the heavy loads that they have to bear. Think about Mary Gerhart, the load that she has to bear with her husband in hospice. She has worked to provide a good example for her husband to accept the Lord. She continued to come on Sundays to show her husband that it was important. She continued to bring her girls to show them that it was important. And she hasn't wavered. If she can be here, she's here. And there's a lot of women in this congregation that are that same way. If they can be here, they're going to be here. Even though they've been dealt some pretty big blows. And I would like you to think about that. Have you considered my servant, fill in your name? God has confidence in you that you can handle whatever it is that he's going to send your way. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 13. God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. God knows that you are stronger than you think you are. God knows that. You know, these sufferings aren't easy for us to go through. We have a brother in our midst, and I've been watching him for the last few years. His name is Randy Engel. Have you ever met a man who tries harder than Randy Engel? I have watched Randy work. That man's got hustle. He's not going to cheat his employer by sitting around milking the clock. A.E., milk the clock, get it? You know, Randy works really hard, bringing forth lessons in class, and he studies hard, and he does his best. And now he's sat with this scary thing that he might go into some sort of allergic shock. How scary is that? That's pretty scary. It's really scary. But if God and Satan still do sit and talk, I imagine that God said, "Have you considered my servant Randy? There is none like him." And Randy's going to handle this like a champ. Because I know Randy. And he's going to be like everybody else in this room. When the problems happen, we draw closer to God, don't we? I'd like to remind you of Romans 8:18. "I consider that our present sufferings are not worth comparing to the glory that will be revealed in us." You know, I talked a little bit about the last chapter of Job. I have something here highlighted that I want to read. "After Job had prayed for his friends, the Lord made him prosperous again and gave him twice as much as he had before. All his brothers and sisters and everyone who had known him before came and ate with him in his house. They comforted and consoled him over all the trouble the Lord had brought upon him." Verse 12. "The Lord blessed the latter part of Job's life more than the first." There is no guarantee that on this earth we're going to get reinstated like Job. But I would submit to you that this is our first life. And when we pass over that River Jordan, we're going to get into that latter life. I would like to think that it's a comforting thought that all of the brothers and sisters, to all who have gone before us, will come to our mansion and comfort us. Isn't that quite a thought? Doesn't that make you want to press on and not get bogged down by our current trials? Doesn't that give us something to look forward to? As I draw this lesson to a close, I want to remind us of Hebrews chapter 3, verse 13. "Encourage one another daily, as long as it is called today, so that none of you may be hardened by sin's deceitfulness." You have encouraged me. Through your cards and your prayers and your texts and your visits, you have encouraged me by watching how you took care of Fred and her family. I remember sitting at that luncheon, and here's Bruce Harvey trying to clean off tables, and he himself can barely walk. Wow! What a testament. What an encouragement. We need these encouraging things. We need these things because, as it says, our hearts might become hardened by sin's deceitfulness. Sin is deceitful, and it can catch us when we're not looking for it. It can blindside us. And all of a sudden we can think that nobody likes us. Nobody loves us. I'd just as well go sit in the corner and eat worms. But our best defense for that is to encourage one another. And even if you're the one who thinks you need encouragement, I would suggest to you to pick up the phone and try to encourage somebody else. Was that because I learned just lately that when I do that, I'm usually the one getting encouraged. There's a speech that you can see from Jimmy V. I don't know if any of you remember Jimmy V, but he was the coach at NC State, Jimmy Valvano. I know Marilyn McClurg remembers him because the last time I talked about him, she just got all excited. I had no idea Marilyn was a basketball fan. But he come down with cancer in his bones, I believe it was. And he was at an award banquet at ESPN. And I think he said something that God wants us to know. He said, don't give up. Don't ever give up. No matter how bleak it may look, don't give up. It's the most important thing we can teach our, well, maybe not the most, but it's got to be up there. To teach our children not to give up. When they fail at school or at sports, don't let them give up. When they're beating themselves up because they think they've sinned, don't let them give up. Give up is from Satan. That's what Satan was wanting Job to do, was to give up. That's what Job's wife wanted him to do, is to give up. We can't afford to give up. Our church has got a lot of heavy things going on right now. Let's remember one another. Let's not let one another give up. Let's encourage them so that sin doesn't take them down a path they don't want to go. At the end of every lesson, sermon, service, we give a gospel invitation. It's an invitation to invite you into God's family. To give you that avenue in which you can lean on God. So that you can have that peace that passes all understanding. It's to help us get through these hard times. So, we're going to offer you a gospel invitation if you have not been baptized. We're going to offer you to come forward as we stand and sing and to become a part of God's body.